Welcome to Fringe Power, Local 107.3 FM's Summer 2013 series spotlighting New Brunswick's inaugural Fundy Fringe Festival on the FM dial. Taking place from August 21st to 25th right here in St. John, the Fundy Fringe Festival joins 23 other Canadian Association of Fringe Festival member communities in bringing uncensored, non-juried, audience-accessible, and 100% artist-driven theater to their hometowns. That means the performance gloves are off, anything goes, and Fringe Power will be bringing you a selection of spotlights, interviews, media, and more from some of the folks you will be encountering this August 21st to 25th. Please visit FundyFringeFestival.com for more information on how to attend or get involved. Find Fringe Power broadcast weekly Mondays at 6 p.m., Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Sundays at 1 p.m. right here on Local 107.3 FM and online at localfm.ca. And don't forget to find Fringe Power on Facebook for podcasts, updates, and much more. On this week's episode, we feature Alexandra Lent, Artistic Director of 2B-Determined Theatre Company for Young People out of Guelph, Ontario, and Sussex-based stand-up comedian Lloyd Raven. But first, we start with the first of a two-part spotlight on St. John's own musician, busker, and performance artist Sandy McKay, who brings his character Morlock the Warlock to life at this year's Fundy Fringe Festival. You have an interesting... You're not from St. John originally.
That's correct.
You have...
CFA.
What's that?
I'm a CFA.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you are. And you have a fairly interesting story about how you found yourself transplanted here by way of Halifax.
That's
right. You
want
to share that with the listeners?
Sure thing. I was working with a band called Karl Marx Left-Handed All-Stars, and we were a street performing group in Toronto and around Southern Ontario, and we got invited to come to the Halifax Buskers Festival. And we loved Halifax and decided... We got back to Toronto after the show, and we drove around Toronto for a day, and we thought, wow, Toronto is so cold compared to the warmth and the friendliness we felt in Halifax. And everyone in the band, well, there were two of us at that point, quit our jobs in Toronto, and we're back in Halifax by October 1st.
Cool.
So the Buskers Festival was around the end of July and the first week of August, I think. And we moved back to Halifax and never looked back.
That's a fast turnaround.
Yeah. And I'm really happy that I've made the choice. My partner, who was in the band at that time, is still in the Maritimes as well. He's living up in Cape Breton.
Oh, cool. Right on. And so how did you find yourself in St. John after that?
In our shows, we would always invite people from the audience to participate in some of the various foolish things we did. And one of the participants was Mary Jo Boyce, who is from St. John. And we started courting and eventually got married. And she had a job here in St. John waiting for her when she finished university. Mm. So when she finished university at Dal, we both came back here to St. John and raised a family. And I've been here ever since, about 24 years.
Funny to think of one's creative life and one's personal life being so intertwined, especially as they are in your case. How do you find managing both of those things to, you know, keep yourself as well as your creative self satisfied all this time?
It's always a bit of a juggling act, and you're a performer as well. You know that sometimes you're you're in the middle of a project, and you need to give that project your full energy, and sometimes you need to give your family your full energy, and so it's always a bit of a juggling act. And I'm sure at times my family would have said, you gave too much energy to that project at that time. Now my kids are older, and I'm able to give much more energy to my creative work.
The work you're bringing to the Fringe Festival in particular involves a character from your past, Morlock the Warlock, which was an old busking bit that you said you had done back in the day. Tell us about Morlock. He sounds like an interesting character.
Morlock the Warlock is coming into creation right now. Pieces of Morlock have been existent in other shows that I've done. I didn't know his name at that point. Hmm. His name just showed up within the last year, and I've always had these different parts of this show going on at different times, and this Fringe Festival show is a real opportunity to pull all those parts together with this character. And Morlock is a immortal Celtic warrior who has lost something, and he's really mad about what he's lost, and he's a bit of my alter ego because I'm becoming an old man, and so it's an interesting way to channel my inner rage and my inner aging as well. So it's really fun to have this vehicle presenting itself in an acceptable outlet.
It sounds like the show is going to be fairly participation heavy with regards to the audience. What are audiences walking into when they come to see Morlock the Warlock at the festival?
Morlock is a Celtic warrior who plays bagpipes, so there will be bagpiping. There'll be some Highland dancing. There'll be people given the opportunity, perhaps, to try the bagpipes even. There will be... I have a loose script that when I invite audience members to participate, it can go in a number of different directions, and that's one of the really exciting things about doing street performance and inviting people in, is you never know exactly how it's going to go. There are battle scenes that I involve audience members in, and there's the creation of an ocean that requires some assistance from audience as well.
Do you have any particularly entertaining or successful or possibly even disastrous audience participation stories you can share?
I certainly do. The first time I brought this character into one of my performances, I invited someone from the audience to come and do a battle with me. And the woman who I invited said to me, "I'm a recently divorced woman and I have a lot of pent-up aggression. Are you sure you want to go through with this?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, I'm not afraid." And I should have been afraid because she had a lot of pent-up aggression. She beat me to the ground, bloodied my nose, and it was a great show, but it was a little bit painful. And it reminded me of how things can go when you invite someone in and there's no script. And it's, you know, the theater and music is a creative outlet for the artist. Inviting someone onto your stage, if they're willing to play with you, it's a creative outlet for them too, to act out their aggression in this case. And so it was a very funny show, and she was a little apologetic when she helped me out, but it was
well, she gave you fair warning, I guess, right?
That's right.
What else are you up to these days besides being Morlock?
I've just finished recording an album. It's been out for about a year now, so I'm touring that album. I was down in New York City late last winter, November, just before Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, yeah.
So my friend Sid, who got me the gigs in New York, said, "If I want to come back to New York, I'm more than welcome, but I have to change my name." He said, "I don't think I can get you gigs as Sandy anywhere."
Have you been involved in a Fringe before?
I've never been involved in a Fringe Festival before. This is the first one. And when I got the invitation, it came from my friend Shane McGee, who, as you know, passed away sadly recently. I was interested in participating with the Fringe Festival because of Shane. I wanted to work with Shane, and because of his energy and enthusiasm, I thought it'll be fun to do this with him. I'm willing to pull this character out of the closet and reinvigorate my own theatrical life. It's been a few years since I've done this sort of thing, so this is coming back to an old passion for me. Doing theater is... I find is more emotionally challenging than performing music. When you perform music, you have a song, it's a 3-minute piece or a 5-minute piece, and that piece may be very emotional, but you get to set the schedule or the set list, and you know you can play a sad song and you can follow it up with a lighter number. With theater, you've got an hour show, and you have to really get into that character and all the emotions that you want the audience to feel. So you really have to dig deep and be very authentic.
Is there anything else you want to share with audiences?
Well, I'm looking to see you all out at the Fringe Festival. It's an exciting opportunity for St. John, and I think it's a really cool thing that's happening. I'm really looking forward to seeing all these different shows, and I'm planning to get to all the shows myself and look forward to seeing all your listeners out there.
Well, thanks a lot, Sandy, for your time today. Appreciate having you.
Thank you, Judd. All right, pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
We'll come back to Sandy later in the show as yours truly gets down to the nitty-gritty of attempting to play Morlock the Warlock's bagpipes. But first, here's a selection from Sandy's own album, Call of the Wild. This is I Am a Sailor on Fringe Power, Local 107.3 FM. That was Sandy McKay with I Am a Sailor. Stay tuned to hear Sandy school your host in the surprisingly brutal experience that is playing the bagpipes. And meanwhile, let's go now to Be Determined Theatre Company's artistic director Alexandra Lent, who is bringing their production of the children's story Stella Luna to the Fundy Fringe Festival this August 21st to 25th. I spoke with Alexandra by telephone after a day of work with the gang at To Be Determined in Guelph, Ontario. To Be Determined Theatre Company is possibly a little bit of a different kind of company than people might expect from a Fringe Festival, or at least this being St. John's first Fringe. And you can probably tell listeners why that might be the case. Tell us a little bit about To Be Determined.
Sure. To Be Determined Theatre Company is wrapping up its second season. We are what I call a youth-focused company. So we do youth programming, youth productions, as well as what Stella Luna is, which is professional adult actors who are doing the show for youth. We pride ourselves on doing innovative, interesting, engaging work, especially when we do the youth programming. We do socially infused theater, which would be hot topics, you know, like fair trade, the cycle of violence, these sorts of things. Okay. The teenagers really love putting that on stage. So Cell Loon is much different. It's much more of a relaxed summer fun show, and it's our first piece that actually isn't Canadian written, but it is based on the fantastic children's book. So.
Yeah, I wanted to ask. I noticed that in some of the info you sent me before. What was it that attracted you to this story, to do the production?
It was a bit tricky for me, actually, because I am so used to doing like deep pieces, and I didn't want that for this. I wanted it to be a nice, fun summer piece that the whole family could come to. But with that in mind, I do think theater is more interesting when it has some sort of depth to it or purpose to it. And Stella Luna combines both of those things. It's this beautiful book about a bat that gets lost from her mother and has to try and fit in somewhere in the world and is told by everyone that she's wrong just because she's different. And then in the end decides that it's actually okay to be different. It makes you individual. And there was something about that simple story that I think we all need reminded of probably daily that caught my eye and made me think that we could really add some fun acrobatics and humor and costumes so that it was interesting for all ages.
Yeah, well, and that's something else I found very intriguing about the show. There is a lot of sort of elements and or balls in the air, so to speak, with the acrobatics and music and comedy. Tell us a little bit about how that all came together, what audiences might want to expect or look forward to, rather, coming to see the show.
Absolutely. I think we did the classic circus mentality. We start with one simple thing. We have a trampoline on stage. And then it was like, okay, cool. Now what? It just kind of built from there.
Yeah.
And so we have a trampoline, we have this 7-foot arch that we climb on, hang from, dance on, jump from, and then the costumes are slightly absurd and fantastic. At the same time, they're huge and colorful, and what I wanted to do was be able to hit a wide audience base with so many different elements that was fun and it, uplifting. You know, just some fun theater.
How has the reception to the play been?
Actually, wonderful.
Yeah?
And what really interests me is how mesmerized the kids get by it. It's so far, the audiences have been really, I think, engaged by both knowing the story in advance. A lot of the kids know the story.
Okay.
And it's really sweet when they come up to us after and they say, we read the story before bed last night, so we were all ready. And it's so cute.
Thanks.
And then watching them realize that a story or a play can come to life in front of them. And for a lot of these kids, that's the first time they've seen it. And it's really neat to get to watch them kind of just leap out of reality and enjoy that. And as an adult, that's what I love about theater, is being able to just step back and believe whatever's in front of you. And these kids, you don't have to tell them to do that, right? They do that naturally.
So. Oh, yeah. Certainly. So well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so far we've been blown away by how the children have just been mesmerized and excited by what they see on stage.
And a lot of the kids that you have worked with, including the actors in the Stella Luna production, have, from the sounds of it, have essentially grown up in or with the To Be Determined company. How do you find working with, you know, all of these kids of all ages over the years, and especially with them now as they're young adults and you all have this sort of shared history behind you?
I absolutely love it. I do. I love my job, every part of it, with, you know, parts of it that frustrate you more than others. But I love working with the youth and then seeing them grow up in front of you. And theater has this ability to let you be who you want to be. And you don't have to be the best actor or the best dancer or the best singer, because everyone has something to contribute. And to me, theater is a community, and that's why it's exciting, because it wouldn't work with one of you. It has to be all of you for it to work. And with such a safe, wonderful atmosphere, I think that's why it's really exciting to watch these youths grow up into young adults and feel like they have such pride and confidence in themselves, whether it's on stage or anywhere else in life.
This festival experience that and the production that you guys are bringing to St. John is part of a big step for a lot of for these actors. It's your first professional summer tour, and from what I understand, the company's first concussion as well. How have the shows been and the tour been going?
Like theater. There's always something new. Yeah. And it is a big step for a lot of these actors, which is also really fun to watch. And because a lot of the shows have been outdoors, that just adds a whole new element of versatility, I'll say, for lack of a better word, because there's always something, whether it's weather or location or audience size, there's always something new, a new hurdle that you have to get over and get used to. Some shows we have body mics, some shows we're just screaming over the wind or the traffic behind us. The one show, it was actually me that got a concussion.
Oh, no.
Because we have this big arch that we swing from, and there was a statue that was closer than I expected, and cracked my head open on it, and I had to keep going because the audience was all sitting there waiting. So,
oh, man.
There's always something fun. And to me, it sounds ridiculous, but if you're in theater, I think you get it. To me, that's where the rush and the excitement comes from, because that's where, you know, it counts that you've done all your hard work in advance, that you can handle literally anything that comes at you.
How was that going, completing the show with, you know, with a head injury?
The funny thing was, it hurt, I'm not going to lie. It hurt a lot. And I was a little worried whether I can continue. And after about a minute or so, I realized it would be all right. And so we kept going somewhat seamlessly. And then it wasn't until after the show. Once I got back into the show, it was like, okay, everything's fine. And then after the show, I put an ice pack on the back of my head, and there was blood on it. Ooh. And then I was like, oh, maybe this is worse than I thought.
Traditionally, people expect the unexpected at a Fringe. You know, and hopefully not a concussion this time around.
We decided no more head injuries.
No,
that's our new rule.
That's a good rule to have, yeah. Have you or any of the other performers taken part in a Fringe before?
No, actually none of us have, which is really exciting. And none of us have even been out east. Like, this is just a whole bucket of new, and we're all so excited.
Is there anything you'd like, any final thoughts or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
That we're really, really excited both to be part of the festival as well as watch the festival and meet the performers and get new ideas and see what's going on out east.
Nice.
It just seems like a fantastic way to celebrate theater.
Well, thank you so much for your time with us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, and we'll look forward to seeing you with the troupe out here in August.
Excellent.
Excellent. This has been Alexandra Lent from To Be Determined Theater Company.
That was To Be Determined Theatre Company's Alexandra Lent, who is bringing their production of the children's book Stella Luna to the Fundy Fringe Festival here in St. John. And now for something completely different, let's catch up with Sussex-based comedian Lloyd Raven. Lloyd is bringing his one-man show, Funny Daddy, to the Fundy Fringe Festival, but first, here's an excerpt from his regular stand-up show, recorded in Charlottetown PEI in 2012, looking at what it's like to be a Maritimer in Toronto. Our chat with Lloyd follows right after this.
But the cool thing about being a Maritimer in Toronto is that you're in the most multicultural city in the world. There are people everywhere from everywhere, and you always have that one guy that you meet, and he hears that you're from the Maritimes. He's like, New Brunswick, what's it like there? As though I'm the most exotic guy he's met today. This is true. A guy said to me one time, in the Maritimes, do you have the same subjects in school that we have in Ontario? I know. And I tried to reason with him, and he didn't get it. So finally, I just said, well, yeah, we call them the same things, but they have to adjust them so that we can understand them. For instance, if you were to open a physics textbook in the Maritimes, you would see a problem that goes like this. And they all start the same way. They go like this. Now, think about this, my son. Suppose George leaves Truro Harbor in his boat, and he's going right some fast. And the waves is about yay high. And Eddie leaves Morrell Harbor. Who will get their unemployment check in the bank first?
You've received accolades of being called one of North America's hottest young comics by the GQ in the UK. You've been a top 10 finalist for Canada's Next Top Comic in 2011. How does a fellow such as yourself stay humble in the midst of such high praise?
Well, the occasional night of poor ticket sales keeps you humble for sure. I think probably most importantly, being married with three little boys would keep anybody humble.
There you go.
The kids are really great at making you feel fantastic, and then in the next breath, making you feel horrible. One of the stories that I tell in my show is the story of the time that I came home from a weekend away at a comedy club, and my little boy met me at the door saying, Daddy, I haven't seen you in so long, but I talked to you in my head every day that you were gone. And I thought, my heart was just full, and it was one of the best feelings ever. And then he followed it up with, just like I'll do when you're dead soon.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's so warm.
That keeps you humble.
there's not really any two ways around that.
No.
Well, and your comedy's very much informed by your personal life and your family. And the show that you're bringing to St. John is Funny Daddy, I assume, is also informed by the same. Tell us about this production and why your family and personal life play such a large role in your work.
Well, I guess that, for me, when I first started performing comedy, I just thought about what's unique about me. When I the first few things that I wrote down to talk about in my comedy set, and, some of the things that have happened around here in my family with being a dad of three boys, were the things that jumped out at me. And it's really, for the most part, a lot of the comedy that I've done in the 7 years since has definitely stemmed from my life as a dad. And this show in particular brings a lot of that kind of all together in one package, along with some other stories that aren't so much about stand-up comedy, but some more serious stories that I tell throughout this show as well. And it's something that I've had in mind for a while, because I could kind of see that a lot of the material that I was writing was trending towards that parenting topic, and it kind of made sense to pull it all together into one show. I think that the reason probably is the theme of this show is that even when things are going not the way you expect them to go, I think it's really important to continue to be as silly as you can whenever there's an opportunity to be silly, and that's what kept me sane. And that's really what this show is all about. And, you know, parenting, you need every silly moment you can get.
As much as the content is family-oriented in nature and content, I understand this performance that you're bringing, though, is more of an adult kind of show.
Yeah, I wouldn't bring kids to one of these shows.
Okay.
You know, I use certain words, and I talk a little bit about, you know, where babies come from.
Okay.
I can put it that way, maybe.
There you go.
You know, it's definitely aimed at the parents. It's about having kids, but it's not for kids.
You're actually from our neck of the woods. I'm speaking with you in Sussex right now, so you're one of the New Brunswick performers who is coming. But you've been taken to Toronto and back again. And while you were there, you also had the opportunity to study with the Second City Training Center. How did this benefit your comedy? And as you say, you weren't doing comedy initially when you went there. How did that all come about, and how did Second City play into that?
Well, I initially, you know, we'd been there for a few years, and I guess about a year after our son was born, I became a full-time stay-at-home dad.
Hmm.
And, you know, I don't know, maybe it was just a bit of a defense mechanism. I just felt like I needed to get out and try this thing that I've wanted to do all my life. I can remember I was, you know, 10 or younger when I first decided that I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, but I never really thought that I really would do it. But Toronto is such a great comedy scene, so I went out and checked out some open mic shows and chose one to be my first show, and I just went up and gave it a shot, and I was hooked right away. And then over time, I guess Second City came into play because I just really wanted to have that improv experience. I'm not a very good improviser, but I took a one-year course through Second City in improv. And I think that it helped a lot in terms of being able to be a little more in the moment, because, you know, you can plan out what you want to say in a stand-up show, but all it takes is one comment from the audience, and you're kind of off track a little bit. And that improv training just, I found, really helped with being able to be in the moment a little more. You know, audiences are generally pretty good. You know, so I haven't had any terribly sticky situations. But just like I say, you know, you're going down a path, and, you know, occasionally in an audience there's somebody who enjoys finishing your jokes for you before you get there, or, you know, just shouting out the occasional comment, being the color commentator for the audience. And usually they've had too much to drink and think that everybody really enjoys that, and, you know, it doesn't add a whole lot to the show. So just having the ability to get the show back on track, you know, I think that has been helpful. You know, the Second City training has been helpful in being able to kind of keep that going, especially I MC quite a few shows at Yuck Yucks in Halifax, and that, you know, a comedy club atmosphere like that, you know, you really have to be able to think on your feet a little more.
Certainly. Well, and yeah, and you have a number of irons in the fire, mentioning the Yuck Yucks and all that as well, and you have a regular radio spot there on CJCW in Sussex, and also the Bay of Funny. Or tell us about some of these other things you have on the go besides your stand-up.
Yeah, so they're all very interconnected. The spot that I do on the radio station here in Sussex is called Lloyd's Morning Cup of Jokes, and every morning I just introduce a different comedy clip. It's just a two-minute segment. I just introduce a comedy clip from one of my favorite comedians from around the world. So it obviously ties in very well. Occasionally I even play some of my own material. I think that it's just been really good. The way that's been extremely helpful for me, or one way in which that's been extremely helpful for me, has been the ability to keep in touch with some of my comedian friends from Toronto and other places now that I'm back here in New Brunswick. Because I always make sure I get people's permission before I use their material. So I'm in regular contact with comedians all the time that way. And the other is the Bay of Funny Comedy, which is a company that I've started through which I produce comedy shows around the Maritimes. So I have comedians coming down from Toronto and coming in from other regions around the Maritimes to do shows all over the place. And that's kind of been a growing thing over the last little while. Just did a little tour with a couple of comics from Toronto, and I have quite a list from across the country who want to come down here and perform, because everybody knows that Maritime audiences are fantastic.
Oh, wonderful, yeah. Is there anyone in particular who you would point to as, you know, as either an inspiration for your own comedy, or even just anyone who's particularly impressed you as a comedian, or even an up-and-coming comedian or anything?
Well, two comedians who come to mind when you ask that. My first comedy inspiration, and what I do today bears no resemblance to what this person does, but the first comic that I saw on TV and thought, that's what I want to do, was Howie Mandel.
Oh, yeah, right on.
When I was a little kid, and he would do the thing where he would put the surgical glove over his head and blow it up with his nose so he looked like a rooster. When I was 9 years old, that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life, and that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I don't do that. I don't do anything like what Howie Mandel does, and nobody does, and that's why he's Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
But he was my kind of first real comedy inspiration. More recently, somebody who I really look up to a lot is Mike Birbiglia from New York.
Okay.
He's from Boston. Mm-hmm. He is just a really, really good storyteller, and he can tell a story about anything and make it hilarious. Mm-hmm. So I would list him as somebody. But as far as Canadians, I've got to also just mention, there's one comic who I've said ever since the first time I saw him at an open mic show about 7 years ago when he was just starting out. His name is Bobby Mayer,
mm-hmm.
and I know people are going to hear his name a lot more. He's performed in New Brunswick a few times, but he's working in Europe right now, doing a lot of great stuff over there, becoming a big star, and he's going to be one of the next big comedy stars. So watch out for Bobby Mayer.
This is St. John's first Fringe Festival. You know, do you have any Fringe thoughts for audiences?
Well, it's my first Fringe Festival as well.
Oh, great, okay.
So I'm excited about that.
Cool.
So, and I've been doing this show, Funny Daddy, around the Maritimes. I've even done it already in St. John once at St. Malachy's High School. I always love St. John audiences. I have a lot of friends there who are great supporters of my shows, and it seems that the audiences grow each time. So I just really enjoy performing for people in St. John. And having toured this show around the Maritimes over the past few months, and it's a continuing tour that I'm doing, it's nice to be able to do a show 45 minutes from home, because so many of these shows where I'm going off for, you know, a five-hour one-way trip, and I always like to try to be home in time for breakfast with my kids, so it involves, you know, the odd nap in a McDonald's parking lot, so this one is kind of nice that it won't involve that.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Lloyd, thanks especially for taking a few minutes with us today.
Cool. Well, thanks for calling, Judd.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now here's an excerpt used with permission from CBC's Information Morning of Lloyd Raven's one-man comedy show Funny Daddy, which he brings to the Fundy Fringe Festival this August 21st to 25th.
Our son needed intense therapy as part of his continuing stroke recovery, so I left my job with a magazine publisher and stayed home to help manage his therapy. Whenever I tell people that, I'm surprised in this day and age by the looks on their faces. I can tell they're thinking that I gave up my manhood with that decision. That always surprises me, but not as much as it surprises me to realize that they're at least partly right. I became such a girl when I was a stay-at-home dad. I remember one day rushing around to make sure the house was clean before my wife got home. I had the vacuum cleaner in one hand and suddenly realized that things hadn't gone the way I had ever imagined when I clued in that I had a glass of white wine in my other hand. Oh my gosh, and why is Dido playing in the background? What has happened to me? I vowed to get a little manlier. I insisted I would. It didn't work out. I realized this one day when, while driving in the car, I turned on the radio and a U2 song came on and I started singing along. It wasn't until the song was done that I realized that my lyrics were wrong. I had been singing, "It's all right, it's all right, it's all right, she moves in Wisteria Lane." For the men who've never been down this path, I'll fill you in. Wisteria Lane is where the desperate housewives live. Oh my gosh, what's happening to me? Listen, it's not as though I was ever a tough guy, but this was a new low. Never a tough guy is an understatement, really. My poor father-in-law must have been so thrilled when his beautiful little girl came home that day to say, "Daddy, this is my new boyfriend. He drives a skateboard, he's going to cooking school, and he needs your help to change the tire on his father's car because he has no idea how to do it." But he's always put up with me. And as an aside, when I first started in stand-up, my mother-in-law told me that her only rule was no in-law jokes until I got as big as Seinfeld. Well, we can all see that's never happening, so the deal's off. Seriously, though, so many comedians tell jokes about how they can't get along with their in-laws. It's easy. Well, my in-laws kind of messed that up on me since they're so nice. I've missed out on at least 20% of the easiest jokes out there, thanks to them and their niceness. It's true, we've always gotten along really well. My father-in-law, who worked a lot of his life as a carpenter, comes over to help me with projects around the house, because he knows I'd just end up knocking the whole thing down. One day he was helping me install a new light fixture, and he said, "Lloyd, could you grab me a Phillips screwdriver?" I said, "Yeah, I can do that. That's one job I can do." I ran to my toolbox, rifled around, and came back to say, "Sorry, Jim, I don't have any Phillips, but I do have a whole box full of Mastercraft. Will one of those do?" Still, he puts up with me.
We warned you, and here it is, our in-depth look into Sandy McKay, a.k.a. Morlock the Warlock's bagpiping, including a terrifying chance for yours truly to try the instrument on for size. Trust me, this has been heavily edited for horror, as 10 minutes of bagpiping by your host is more arduous than anybody deserves to hear. We've cut it down considerably so that only my ego is at threat, and not so much your ears. Okay, we're here with Sandy McKay, who's bringing the Warlock show to Fundy Fringe Festival, and Sandy's just unpacking Morlock's bagpipes right now, which surprisingly fit in a case not a whole lot larger than your average shoebox, actually.
Yep.
That's impressive.
When they're deflated, they're very small, like many of us. When we're deflated, we get pretty tiny.
It's true.
These things are the drones. These make the one note. The big one makes the B-flat. The smaller ones make a B-flat and octave up.
Okay.
And they just play one note, and they've got a great big read like that, sucker.
Oh, wow. There you go. There's that sound we know and love.
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, what do you... Bagpipes are interesting. They always seem to get kind of like a funny rep with folks, or they're often the butt of jokes, or...
Well, they're
like
hard
that
to play in tune, because the keeping them in tune is all about the pressure from your diaphragm.
Okay.
And keeping the bag full. So as someone who's getting older, I'm starting to understand, holy cow, this is a really hard instrument to play, and you'll find out when you try it out.
Yeah.
That keeping it in tune is all about being in good physical condition. And if you're tired, for example, it's hard to keep them in tune. And that accounts for some of the wow that sometimes is really a terrible sound. And I've done it sometimes. I've heard myself playing and I thought, oh my God, I sound like a bagpipe joke. And so if you're going to play bagpipes, you really have to be committed to staying in good physical condition to play the instrument. Like a guitar is your body's working it, right? It's your hands and your fingers that's working the strings. But with these wind instruments, it's your whole system that's going.
Yeah.
This part is the chanter, and it's got a double reed like an oboe. And it's pretty loud, so I'm going to just turn away from the mic a little bit so
we
don't blow your levels.
Go for it.
So I'm wetting the reed just a little bit, and that's the part that plays the tune when you're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Part of Sandy's show is to play this character, Morlock the Warlock, who sounds like he's going to put on a pretty interesting time for the audiences. But the audiences will be involved to a good extent in the show, and possibly even playing these bagpipes.
So I'm going to see how well I fare as a test audience subject, I suppose.
So to get them going, you blow the whole bag up with air, and it takes about 40 pounds of pressure to keep the bag going, and I'll give you a quick tune here.
All right. Bravo. Okay, well, here we go then. All right.
Holding it under my arm. This is the mouthpiece.
Yeah, you hold that right tightly in your teeth.
Okay.
And one hand comes right down to this thing down here.
Okay.
There you go. And when it blows up, it'll fit in under your arm nice and snugly.
Wow. So I have to just blow it up?
Yep.
Right now?
Three or four stout breaths. There you go.
Oh, and the sound starts after it's...
The sound starts after it's up to pressure.
Okay.
I'm getting there. I might pass out, and I think I'm only barely getting to the point where I can start playing it. Is that correct?
Yeah, you've got the drones going, but you haven't got the chanter going yet. So it takes a little extra push to get the chanter going once you get the drones going.
And
so you've got two out of four pieces going.
Wow. How do I know when the chanter's ready?
Oh, it'll kick in. It'll start making squealing noises.
And that'll start...
Yep.
Start fingering.
No, there's nothing you can do with your hands to make it to make it work.
Should I be squeezing the?
Yeah, when you take a breath in, there's a valve in here, so you can open your mouth wide. There's a valve to keep the air from going that way.
Oh, okay.
So you don't have to block it with your tongue or anything.
Gotcha. Okay.
You can open your mouth wide, take a big breath. When you take a breath in, is when you squeeze with your elbow to keep the pressure constant.
Gotcha. Okay.
And what the goal is to keep the pressure going out all the pipes at once constant. So when you take a breath in, you squeeze with your elbow, blow, and let your elbow out again. So there's a bit of a
sort of refilling when you get back in.
Exactly. It's like a big reservoir.
Third time's the charm.
All right, here we go. Good for you. Most people give up before this.
That was unbelievably difficult, Sandy.
It is unbelievably difficult. It's a really hard thing to do. So next time you're walking along and you hear some bagpiper that's going out of tune, the reason is because they can't keep the pressure in their diaphragm and their mouth.
Man.
How are your lips?
Sore.
Yeah.
Very sore. What is it? The
embouchure.
Okay,
the embouchure.
That was difficult. I had to clasp my own hand around my lips to try and maintain the seal for blowing the air, and wow, I don't know what's more disgusting right now, me sweating or the what I can only imagine, whatever spit valve in there, whatever state that's in. I'm sure those two things could give each other a run for their money. Wow, I'm exhausted. I'm completely spent.
That's you did amazing. A good job. You lasted way longer than most people are willing to give it a whirl. That's really good.
Wow. How often do people stick with it when you give this to them at shows? It's so difficult. I never would have imagined.
Very few people can keep the drones going and get a sound out of the chanter first try. I think over the 40 years or so that I've been playing, I let a lot of people try this, and very few people can get it going. And surprisingly, some of the people that have got it going are not necessarily big people.
Mm.
They're people who happen to have good diaphragms.
Yeah.
And know how to push from their diaphragm. And it's a really unusual way of breathing that normally we don't do. We don't pay attention much to our diaphragm at all. And I joke with my wife. I say, you think I got a beer belly? I've just got this huge muscle below my rib cage to play these bagpipes. It's not a fat belly at all.
I'm kind of sitting here shaking. I'm that exhausted from just trying that. For folks listening, if it does get edited down, I was probably just blowing into that for what, like
12 minutes or so? 10 minutes?
If that even. Yeah, like I say, I can feel beads of sweat coming down the sides of my head and I'm exhausted. That's unbelievable. It didn't feel that long, but it felt rough.
it's a pretty neat instrument when you get to the physical condition that you can play this and walk.
Oh, man.
And march. And I once had a gig in St. Andrews about 12 years ago. I was hired to play for 6 hours as a group of dignitaries came to the Algonquin Hotel.
Wow.
And after playing 6 hours, I was so energized by playing this because it's blood doping. You're forcing oxygen into your bloodstream. And after playing 6 hours, I didn't sleep for 2 days.
Oh, yeah. You must have just been on cloud nine. You
oxygen
know,
high, yeah.
Wow.
It was great.
When did you start playing the bagpipes? How did you pick these up?
When I was a kid, my mom said to me, Sandy Mackay is a good Scots name, and you're going to learn to play the bagpipes. And I said, I don't want to play the bagpipes. I want to play something cool like the electric guitar. She said, you don't have a choice. I had this plan since you were born. So I started playing bagpipes. I started learning when I was about 10. I started playing the bagpipes by the time I was 13 in my first Highland Games. When you march in the middle of the Highland Games, it's called the mass bands, and it's when all the bands at a function come together and play a couple of tunes. It's like being in the middle of a hurricane when you're surrounded by these instruments. And I'm sure we've seen them in person or on TV when the mass bands are going. Being in the middle of that when you're a little kid was just awe-inspiring. The noise is deafening. And I think that's why pipers march, to get away from the noise. So I've been doing it for more than 35 years now, about 40 years. I grew up playing in pipe bands, traditional music, and over the years I've stopped playing in pipe bands, but I've come to the point where I'm proficient enough now. I can write my own stuff.
Oh, cool.
And play Irish tunes as well. So I like trying different stuff, and this summer I get an opportunity to go to Hillside Festival, and I'm playing bagpipes with a brass band from India.
Oh, wow.
So I'm looking forward to that juxtaposition of instrumental styles.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty amazing combination. That would be quite something.
It should
to catch.
Be fun.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Sandy, for coming back in today and giving me a chance to try those bagpipes out. Wow, I've never tried anything like that before.
It's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to other people trying it as they come to the Funny Fringe Festival.
Yeah, me too.
It'll see the show.
It'll be quite entertaining.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Sandy.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thank you.
Sandy Mackay's Morlock the Warlock will be performed at the Fundy Fringe Festival August 21st to 25th here in St. John, New Brunswick. Thanks to today's guests, Alexandra Lent of the To Be Determined Theatre Company, Lloyd Raven, and Sandy Mackay. New Brunswick's inaugural Fundy Fringe Festival takes place August 21st through 25th right here in Uptown St. John. Please visit fundyfringefestival.com for more information on performers, scheduling, tickets, and how to volunteer. Fringe Power music is by the Kingpins. Find Fringe Power on Facebook for podcasts and more. Fringe Power broadcasts weekly, Mondays at 6 p.m., Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Sundays at 1 p.m. during August 2013 on Local 107.3 FM and online at localfm.ca.